Welcome to the Customer Service Orientation and Safety Committee meeting. Mr. Graham is here. Thank you. I'd like to first move for an approval of the agenda.
So moved.
Is there a second? You want to look at it? Mr. Graham?
I'll second.
Thank you.
All right.
I'm sure everyone's in favor of this. They are great. I feel comfortable going to the approval of the minutes. Why don't we go ahead and do that? We can approve the minutes of July 6th. That's been presented.
Move approval of the minutes.
Thank you. Can I have a second?
Second.
Approve the minutes? Okay, great. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, minutes have been approved. I would suggest that we go ahead with the agenda and have Jim, would you like to start talking about the deployment strategies of the new rail cars?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you. Here today with some good news for all of us and our riders. Go to the first slide. We're now talking about the delivery of our new rail cars that are on order, the 6,000 series cars, as we call them. They're going through their final acceptance from our operations and safety department, and when they pass that, we're going to begin, we're capable of deploying them on the railroad and actually adding service so our customers can see some additional capacity. The slide shows some pictures of the 6,000 series cars, and I'll give you the schedule. We're on a schedule to have six of those cars accepted in service in September. Our commitment from us and our contractor is to have 50 of those cars accepted and in service by December of 2006. And the schedule, as you've seen before, has all 184 of them here and accepted and in service by 2008. So we're here today to talk to you about when we put them in service, where the extra capacity goes. Next slide, please, John. Thank you. Today's action specifically I'm bringing forward is for the first 50 of those cars. Again, our deployment schedule is they'll be here on the property by December, and so we want to be able to put them in service as we accept them, and we can give our customers more service. Our recommendation today, as you'll see, is to take those 50 cars and put them where our trains are the most crowded, and I'll go through our methodology to determine that. It also does reduce the number of four-car trains, and it increases the number of eight-car trains, which was our overall commitment as we purchased the new cars to build up to a max of 50% eight-car trains. Also, very briefly, I wanted to talk about what things we're looking at for all of the 184, the remainder cars after January. Of course, we're going to be recommending additional eight-car trains just to add capacity. Total elimination of the four-car trains, improving reliability. We want to work on our throughput at all of our downtown portals, Roslyn portal, and as well as the LaFont portal. You've heard often we talk about the blue line split. We'll be coming back early next year to talk about specifically what that is, when we would do it, and the impacts of our customers. We're looking at express trains, something our customers have been asking us to do on a couple of our lines, whether or not we can do a skip-stop type of operation. Obviously, we can't pass a train because of our two-track operation, but we've toyed with skip-stops, and we think that with our new trains, new car deployment, when they're all here, we can do some skip-stop and express trains. Also in our mix now is the elimination of turnbacks. There are two turnbacks in the peak period on the red line, one at Grosvenor and one at Silver Spring. We're eliminating the off-peak Grosvenor turnback next month. So we'll be looking at, is there a companion piece to that to eliminate it in the peak? Those strategies, I will be coming back. Again, I'm here today to talk about the first 50 cars. That leads me to this very complicated slide and where we're recommending to put them. Our recommendation is to put them on the most crowded lines and the most crowded trains. How do we figure that out? We actually go out and count all of our peak period trains, AM, PM trains, at 9 locations on all of our lines where the trains are most crowded, and I only do the first one, I won't go through them all. On the red line, coming from Glenmont, trains are most crowded at Gallery Place. So we count the trains. Every train that goes through, we count the people on those trains. So in the peak hour, we count 13,500 people. That's an average over 3 months this spring. During that time period, 140 cars ran through there. So that's an average on every single car of 97 passengers per car. That's my PPC. And some of them, obviously it's an average. Some are higher, some are lower. We have a delay, that train gets real crowded, they back up and bunch up, the last train has less people, and that's an average over a 3 month period when we've done our counts. We've done that for all of the lines. Our system during that time period was averaging those max load points slightly over 93 passengers per car. So on the bottom under the total. And so we've taken that information that we have, and again, I have it by train, by car, but by train, and say, which trains are the most crowded? Where do we want to deploy the first 50? 50 cars will be accepted. Our recommendation to the board is that we deploy 40 of them and keep 10 of them for spares. Our normal spare ratio is a 20% spare ratio, so that any given day when a train is down, whether it's for normal maintenance or another, we've got the ability to meet our commitment. So the column that's in bold, the next to the last column, is the proposed deployment for the 50 rail cars. And what we're proposing is 6 of them on each end of the red line, 4 of them on the yellow line, 10 of them on the green line from Branch Avenue, none of them on the other end of the green line from Greenbelt, 4 of them on the blue line from Franconia Springfield, none of them from the blue line in Largo, 10 on the orange line from Indiana, and none on the other. That's the total. And that's our recommendation, so I won't go to the next slide, but I'd like to make one point, because every time I talk to people, I'd like to clarify. We're talking about where the added capacity is, not necessarily the new cars in the beginning. When we accept the first 6 cars, it's a train set, it'll marry together, it's being accepted at Greenbelt. So we'll run it, we've trained the mechanics, we've got Alstom up there, we've got parts up there. It'll stay in Greenbelt for some period of time, but it frees up 6 cars. So we'll take those 6 cars and we'll move them around. 2 in the orange and 2 in the blue and 2 in the green line. So we're adding capacity, but I don't want the customers to perceive that beginning such and such a day they'll see 2 new brand new cars on the red line, because it really, we've got to get a mass of cars, maybe 20 or something, before we start moving them around so that we can train mechanics and move parts. So when I'm talking about adding capacity, it's not necessarily the first 2 6,000 series cars. And I know that'll come up, you'll ask me questions. The press has asked me questions about it, but ultimately I'm here to talk about adding capacity. So that column and the 40 cars is staff's recommendations to where we add the capacity. In your handout was a write-up of the methodology we use, plus a write-up of all the strategies we're looking at in the future. So, Mr. Chairman, that concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Before I ask for other questions, I want to just clarify then that the very first trains will go, particularly in where there is most need. The second group of cars that come in the batch of 50 will start looking at eliminating 4-car trains. Is that correct?
The recommendation is to put them where they're most crowded, and are most overcrowded based on this chart, as you can see, are on the orange line, green line, and the red line. Okay. Those 3 lines today are almost exclusively 6-car trains, so they won't be eliminating the 4 initially.
Questions? Yes.
I just have a question. Well, first of all, I want to say that I'm pleased to see this allocation, because in the past we've had quite a bit of discussion about how these allocations would go, and as we see by the number of cars assigned to the Branch Avenue part of the Green Line, it had been suffering from really serious overcrowding, and I'm pleased to see that this will level that passenger per car out to pretty much in the range where the rest of them are. It's still a little higher than we'd like to see it, but it brings it down from where it was. And my question is, on the 10 that we are assigning to our spare reserve, does that bring us to our normal spare capacity, or what's the status of spares once we make this allocation of 10?
We presently have 950 cars. 40 of them are out for a rehab at any one time with the 2,000-3,000. So we have 910 cars available every day. We've scheduled, Steve's requirement is to put into service 758. That's right at the 20%. It's not one car above or one car below. So this keeps us at that number.
At the 20%.
Correct.
Thank you. Thank you.
I know Mr. Graham had a question, but we'll get to that when he comes back. Any others? Mr. Litton, you have a question?
Well, not a question, but a comment. I applaud the staff for coming up with a policy of allocation and examining the cars and their allocation based upon a policy. This is analogous to a situation I had when I was in the legislature. You had to deal with school funding. It becomes very difficult to satisfy everybody and get in the room. And as you try to come up with a rationale and a policy that makes sense, and this does, it allows you to move in a good direction that's substantive. So I think the policy outline is here is great. Of course, all of us would like to have more cars. And we all would like to have more cars now. But the reality is that you have to come to a reasonable approach to allocation of the cars, and this is one. So thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I could comment really quickly. We would like to have more cars, and we'd like to have them right now. So I'd like to agree with the comments made by Mr. Linton. I would also like to talk a little bit about our strategy. The idea was to focus on places where we have actually observed with real-time data passenger per car loads and really look at where we find the crowding. This whole initiative has been led by the board in an effort to reduce crowding on the system and to build capacity for the people who continue to make what we think is the right transportation choice, and that's the choice to ride Metro. We also recognize, though, that there are a number of issues that that people are interested in addressing, and one of them is the four-car trains. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the four-car trains, because I think we have taken a swipe at eliminating the four-car trains through this program. We'll get rid of five of the current 12 four-car trains we're running today. And then the question is, on a longer-term strategic basis, how do we begin to address the full elimination of those trains so that we can run 6- and 8-car train consists, which would be, frankly, easier for us to manage as well. And so our feeling is that as we get tranches of the 184 cars, if we could come back to the board and show you how we plan to deploy them, show you how we do it over a rolling period, then we can address some of those policy issues as well as some of those issues related to our standards and our functional issues as well. So we think here we have is a new approach to allocating the cars that does it rather than at one, all at once, and then with extra politics layer on top of it. We can actually have good conversation about some of our specific functional issues, as well as some of these policy issues, such as the elimination of the four-car trains. We'd like to talk to the board some more about these priorities, about these strategies, and we will be coming back to you later this year to talk specifically about some of the other initiatives, how we can actually operate these cars in different ways to provide improved service and increased capacity. So there's a real option to have a real opportunity to have a much more fulsome discussion.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, let me recognize Charlie. Mr. Deegan, rather, once I make one comment, I too want to applaud you, and as a Red Line writer, you've given me the information I need to answer questions as to why others are getting trains and how they're allocated. I appreciate what you've done. You put the good of the system first instead of parochial interests, and I want to applaud you. I'd like to recognize Mr. Deegan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move approval of the staff's recommendation.
Second.
Yes.
And I want to add my comments, because I think the last time we had this discussion, we were talking about equity and all of those issues. And this is something that the customers will see. And that's really what this should be about. And the policy seems to be moving in a direction of having a consistency as to not only how we accomplish it, but also how our customers will see the impact to them, and that's the bottom line of what we want to see happen.
Ms. Hudgens had a second. Did you have a comment also, Mr.
No, Rubin? Everybody was anxious to second, so.
Okay.
The recommendation.
All right, call the question. Let's go.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, if I can, I apologize. I didn't introduce Bob Orr earlier. Bob's our acting director of planning and scheduling department. He's been here for over 31 years. His is the staff that does all the counting and does all the planning for both the bus and the rail. So I want to acknowledge his work since you gave me a lot of credit.
Pleasure to meet you all.
Nice job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Let's move now to Mr. Stoner.
Yellow line is now working.
Well, now we have the parking service contract for fiscal year 08.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Stoner is going to make that presentation this morning. Morning, Rick.
No, we tried to. Good
morning, everyone. Today my presentation is concerning our fiscal year 08 parking services contract. As you know, our existing contract has one option year left for fiscal year 08. It's staff's recommendation today to not exercise that option in 08 and to bring forward another procurement to procure a larger array of parking services in one complete package. The idea here is to provide in this contract a base contract, which is our existing contract of attendance services, and also provide a comprehensive array of other services that are option items in that contract. The idea here is that any of those options listed on the next slide here, if you can put that next slide up, John, would be options that would be pre-negotiated in this contract and would be awarded after we go back to the budget committee, outline funding, how we're going to reprogram resources to fund them, and then we would ask the budget committee's approval to exercise those options. This would be a 10-year contract, 5 years base, 5 individual 1-year options. The services here, the option services, aside from the base contract, which is the basic customer service, attendant services, are listed here: cleaning, sweeping, the provision of a multi-space meter program to get rid of the old mechanical meters we have in the system, to have a much more customer-friendly multi-space meter system out there that you can eventually use to have cell phone payment, credit payment, preventive maintenance program to maintain our garages, that would be joint repair, deck sealants, things of that nature. This other item payment solution is to add on to our recent, one of our last presentations about bringing credit to parking. This would improve upon that credit, add more lanes of alternative pavement options, and also add more equipment functionality in the system to provide different things like lot full signs, things of that nature. One other item here would be a request for proposals to reduce the amount of the human element needed in the base contract through equipment, intercom systems, a managed control center type thing that a lot of parking providers are going to. And the last two are carpooling and ride-sharing programs, proposals that would help maximize the use of our finite utility, a parking space. We're really interested in getting more people in one car, and because we do have a finite number of spaces and they're filled most days, and these programs would lead us in a direction to maximize that utility that we have in that parking space. One other item in this request is a smaller P&T contract to take and get this document together so we could get it to the board for approval and have a contract and for the start of fiscal year 08. So my two requests here today are approval to initiate and award this contract, this comprehensive parking services contract, and an approval to initiate and award a consultant contract to to prepare these documents for this contract.
If I could just add before you start, one more point. We have one more option year in our current parking staff contract. And our idea here is to go forward with a replacement contract, but at the same time, create a series of options to look at a broader management strategy for our parking facilities, given the fact that they are, and we have quite a number of parking facilities. They are a comprehensive part of our overall transit system. So this would give then the board options to create a overall parking system and parking strategy based on funding and based on our interest.
Thank you. Yes, Mr. Deegan.
Ray, could you expand a little bit on the intercom system and how that will work in the stations?
Well, the proposal would have the scope of services would ask proposers to propose equipment offerings and operational plans that would move the operation towards more of an operation control center. A lot of parking providers are moving toward intercom, voice and data, and streamed video systems that a customer can actually have a conversation with somebody in a control center that can manage the lot from a remote area. I think that we can't completely get rid of parking staff, but you can reduce that number and have a more mechanized parking operation. You can also
this will eliminate the fact that they currently have to call a cell phone number to get somebody, right?
Correct. Yeah. In our existing system right now, there our P-card deployment, we only have a finite amount of funds. So a large site during the early morning hours only has one attendant, maybe going over 5,000 spaces. So this would give us the ability to handle more customer complaints in a timely fashion. Correct.
I got one more question on cleaning and sweeping. How often do we clean the garages and that means doing the stairwells and kind of washing them out?
That is a program that's handled by our line managers. I don't know the exact frequency.
There is no exact frequency. That's part of the problem. It's based on a demand issue. It's based on, you know, concerns that are raised or trouble that happens, and then request is made to plan. The idea is to try to get this entire program comprehensively managed by our parking folks so that we do have a one single stop for issues related to parking and then have the means of addressing them, as well as explore a ongoing recurring preventive maintenance program that's based on schedules, that is actually based on some legitimate ongoing investments in the asset so that it can be maintained over time.
Told me exactly what I wanted to hear. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Deegan. Yes, Ms. Mack.
I have a couple questions. We have an existing parking contract, right?
Yes, we do.
And does it expire and this replaces it? And when does it expire?
Well, we have one option year left, option year three, that is left. It's an option year. If we don't initiate that option year, the contract would expire at the end of this fiscal year. And this contract would replace the attendant services contract.
So we could either exercise the option year and keep doing what we're doing for yet another year after July 1st, or we could bring this in its place, either just to directly replace what we exactly do right now, or have expanded options for other kinds of maintenance or investment. So the point is that we have one option year left. We don't want to wait to the end of that option year. We do really want to have options. That's why they call them option years, in fact, and actually give the board some choice how to manage this program.
Okay, my other question is, in terms of the funding, how does this funding, I guess the contemplation here is that the first year of this contract would be funded in 2008.
Yes,
2008.
Correct. Yeah. There's an expectation. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay.
That would be the soonest we could do that.
Right. And how does the cost of this contract compare with the what we're spending now for parking.
Well, the initial base of this contract would simply be doing exactly what we're doing now. So hopefully it would be extremely comparable, equivalent. The point is that there are additional options, and what we would like to explore is what are those options? What would a recurring maintenance cycle cost for our garages, for Metro, so that we could then explore as part of the 2008 budget actually paying for that, actually putting that in, and then we would have a mechanism actually doing it.
So is that what you expect to achieve with the $15,000 contract?
The $15,000 contract is going to help us write the expressions for interest or the request for their proposals and write them as options. A number of areas like the Airport Authority around here do this today. And so we want to learn from them. It's just a matter of hiring people with expertise to put it in there. The proposals would come in with the base contract, as GM just explained, plus options. And then we would be in a situation early next fiscal year or sometime in the spring to come back and say, here's the base, here's all the options, here's what we recommend going forward based on where we are with the budget.
And here's how we'd pay for it.
Okay, then, and that's a fine explanation, and so I'd be satisfied to agree to initiate this contract. I have some reservations about giving authority to award because we don't know what we're going to do yet. So I think the award part should be left to further discussion and decision about what it is we're going to do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Mr. Linton.
I think Mrs. Mack helped one of my issues, which you're hiring a consultant to basically, his statement of work will probably be to design what the actual contract will be, or not the contract, but the RFP, request for proposal. Is it your thought that you'll be looking for single vendors, or will you leave the opportunity of a multitude of vendors, each providing different services? Are those options that you're thinking you're going to explore here?
Yes, we are going to explore the options. I see this contract being proposed upon in two different manners, having something similar to a general contractor where they pull a group of specialized companies in specialized areas of interest together to provide all the services, or I see a group of individual companies get together in a group and propose together. I see that basically is the way I see
that,
it unfolding.
That's something else we could explore, is whether individual companies could bid on individual items as well, so we could get some competition within those items. That would be something that we would like to work with
the consultant.
A consultant to do. We'd like to have someone who has some expertise, someone who could go and pull down best practices from around the industry. You only get your response is only as good as your RFP. So we'd like to make a little front-end investment in the RFP so we can come back to the board with the best possible.
Makes sense. And on the payment end, there is no commitment at this point on paying for this multitude of services. This basically is setting out a net, see what comes back, and then the board deciding, based upon what we have received, what we can pay for or what will pay for itself, and making a decision going forward based upon that. And I guess that would also factor in, at some point we have to look at our parking fees. I would imagine that this would some way impact the fees that our clients are paying to park. And that would have to be examined in the context of what comes back and what we anticipate the value being for our clients at the end of the day.
This proposal doesn't presuppose any change in parking
right
fees
now, though. Absolutely. But I think it's obvious that we're going to have to pay for what we choose at some point in time, either covering out other parts of the budget or having it being a service fee, in essence, for utilization. But those are decisions that we'll have to make down the line based upon what comes back and what we choose to support or not support.
Right, but the purpose of this is to give us that information so we can make that. Was there, Mr. Zimmer, did you have a comment you want to make?
I do have a question. It seems that there are two contracts here, one of which is for $15,000.
Right.
interesting that that would even be a separate contract that we need to act on. And the other of which is for $42.5 million.
I want to win the other one.
Well, 5 years.
10 years.
5 years, maybe another
yes,
4 years.
The next thing. And it's a 10-year contract, or at least a 5-year contract that I assume is $21 million for 5 years? Roughly. Why we're kind of doing that. It's a more than $20 million 5-year contract. And if we act favorably on this, then you will go out and advertise and get proposals and make a selection or the contract. And basically 5 years from now, the board will be told there's an option and we're recommending to continue it or not continue it. And we're basically done as far as we're concerned, other than the usual review.
Can I ask a point?
As I read this, it says $42 million for the first 5 years, and the second 5 years is not estimated.
No, that's
that's not correct?
No, it's $42 million for the full 10 years.
So that the statement here.
You're looking at a different place I'm looking, so
where are you reading?
Funding impact.
Well, that's what I see. I see 10 years contract estimated at $42 million for the
first. This amount does not include options.
Oh. It does say that.
Yeah, it does. So what does that mean?
Next sentence, which doesn't
does it include the extra options about whether it's cleaning or whether it's how we deal with the staffing? It's not clear. I apologize.
Another potential add-ons.
Correct.
We should have had.
That's the basic answer.
We should have used a different word than option.
Okay, so then the options within the five-year period
yes.
would be additional cost.
Yes.
How would those be exercised?
Those would have to come back to the board for board approval of the funding. So
good. That's a good answer.
So the answer is all we'd be asking to do is initiate an award, 10-year contract that replaces the existing contract. And if there are things that we'd add to the existing contract, which is the PCAR contract, we'd have to come back to the board for funding to do that. So the board is really getting to act on changes to the way we currently do business. All we're asking here at the base level, I'm using base and option, I really shouldn't, at the fundamental level, is to simply allow us to go and recompete the current contract and ask those people who are competing for it to give us some alternative service delivery methods. I'm trying to stay away from the word option.
Good.
Some alternative service delivery methods and costs that we are going to come back to the board and say, do you want to turn on this function or that function? Here's how much it would cost and here's how we pay. So we're not taking the board's ability out of board's ability to pine and rule and approve the way we manage the program. What we are doing is simply allowing us to move forward to initiate an award, a replacement for what we have.
Okay. Now, I understand that. But the only thing we'll have, basically, on the basic contract, we'll be done for the next 5 years.
Yes.
And I got to tell you, I'm starting to get nervous about long-term commitments and long-term contracts of all sorts because they come back to haunt you in a lot of different ways. It looks good at the front end, but, a few years later, somebody's saying, boy, we got this lousy contract, and look how stupid they were to do that, and da-da-da-da-da. And it's really easy to second-guess these things. I assume that there's a number of advantages in a long-term contract. You get a more favorable deal up front, so today it's probably a better thing than if you didn't. But I have to worry about what happens, in a couple of years and the fact that we're basically taken out of the game.
The reason why we'd be interested in a longer period of performance is if they are going to do some of these asset investments, that would have to be amortized over the cost of a period. So unless we want to make big initial investment slugs, replacing 3,000 meters is going to cost a lot of money. There's an opportunity to spread that out over time.
And there's different ways to do that, since those are things that get money back. You can pay for them a lot of different ways. I understand that, but what you're doing is making the point that up front it's favorable. It's favorable to people sitting here right now. 5 years from now, I'm not sure if anybody sitting at this table is going to be here. Given the last 5 years, there's a decent chance that none of us will be here. And so it's easy to say, okay, look good to us right now.
We're hoping the parking garages and the parking meters will be.
It is an excellent.
That's the idea it's actually made.
I'm just pointing out you're making a real long-term commitment on a pretty big contract, and 3 years from now, it might not necessarily be such a great deal. And that would be fine if you think you have other controls. I'm just, what concerns me is, in my experience, is that when it's government dealing with a private sector company, in any kind of dispute of the contract, you always lose. You know, they screw up, it's your fault. We've already found that in the area of parking services. And in fact, whatever you do, you get sued. So, you know, the only time you have much control is when you haven't yet given somebody a contract and they want the contract from you. And that's why, you know, things that are of more than a couple, 3 years are difficult. Now, sometimes you got to do them for all kinds of reasons, and maybe this is one of those cases. But I think we should, if we're going to do that, go into it with our eyes open. And we have to make really sure then we've got everything in it that we want. Now, let me mention one thing that I don't see addressed here that I think we talked about earlier in the year with this. Where is living wage?
That could be in the contract. And that's one of the things that we would work with our RFP writer to include. What does living wage mean? How would it be implemented? And how would you put it in?
Okay, well, you know, Madam Chair, when we talked about these things earlier in the year, earlier in the budget, we put them off over the budget. Here they are coming back to us. If we don't get them written in here, it's 5 years. So I'll say right now, you know, before this goes to the board, I'm going to want to see that we're dealing with that issue before I support a contract for 5 years.
May I piggyback on that? Mr. Zimmerman, you will recall that we put it off to a period that is covered by this contract. We put it off to January 2007, and so in anticipation of approving it in January 2007, it should indeed be a part of this contract.
That was my understanding.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Mr. Kaufman.
Well, first I want to apologize for colleagues. The good news is board members aren't immune to system hiccups. The first thing I...
Belch.
Oh, it's too early. In any event, in looking at this proposal, I'm actually very glad to see it because for years we've, when it comes to parking, we've provided it. And that's really the extent of it. We've provided it. I think this is a step toward recognizing that it's integral to our customers' experience, many of our customers' experience using the system. Personally, I'm also very glad to see number three as far as the possible ability to make payment via cell phone. As a person who's shelled out for $240 tickets for being held late here and getting to an expired meter on the other end, I welcome that. But some of these issues, again, devil's in the details, Ms. Max said. I'd like to see it before it's formally awarded. Some things, for instance, under number one, when you look at all those pieces of the management of a parking structure, you know, lights, I think also needs to be somehow folded into the mix. Also, I want to have more details about when we talk about an operations center. Anytime we talk about that, you're given space utilization questions, and we'll need to know more about that. Yeah. I also look forward to seeing under number six this issue of parking communications equipment that allows us to reduce the number of employees. That could be a plus as well if it means that it helps the customer. So again, pending us seeing how the private sector reacts, this is a good step forward. I'd also ask that we keep in mind, you know, best practices of other large parking providers, be it the airports authorities here or elsewhere, also the large amusement venues. You know, how have they made parking work for their customers? We have a tendency at any large organization to be proud, less instead acknowledge others may know more than we do.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we said earlier. You know, I don't know, maybe you missed it, was the fact that this is similar, sorry about that, that this is similar to what MWA does, and we would be working with the RFP developer to help us go out and look at what best practices are for managing large assets. I think you're right. I think we've treated our parking asset as kind of ancillary to our overall system. And we woke up one day and we realized we're the region's, if not nation's, one of the nation's largest parking providers. We have over close to 60,000 spaces. Nearly 15% of our riders use parking spot as part of their trip. You need to recognize that that's part of the end-to-end experience and treat it as such.
Thank you, Dan.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion.
Yes, Ms. Mack.
I move that we approve the initiation of the contract.
Second.
Can I just make clarification that is on the main contract, not just the helping, having get someone to help us write the RFP. It's
both
on the top one, not the second one. Just
both of them.
It's comprehensive.
Yes.
Take both.
Okay. Okay. I guess the question is, can we award the smaller one?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. There's been a motion. Second. Further discussion. Call the vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, motion passes. Thank you. Thank you.
I think just
some other business, yes.
Yeah, I just I noticed that we have subsequent board agendas for this committee. Is that right? Is on here. I just want to say that for the escalator update, I have requested this of staff, but I've heard nothing back. But because of the ongoing problems, I would like a policy drafted and put before this committee, which would require staff to provide posted notices of why an escalator or elevator is not working, and to indicate as best we can a timeline for the repair. I have asked for this so many times, and for some reason, which I cannot explain and I don't care to, anymore, the staff just seems unwilling to inform the public of these important issues, and I think it relieves so much of the frustration and reaction that people feel if they could just be given some basic information about what is the problem, what are we doing to fix it, and when do we hope to have it fixed, is the type of basic information that our writing public is, I think, entitled to have. So, because I haven't been getting this from staff, I would like to have a policy drafted for my review so that we can present it actually for action. I just wanted to make that point.
Okay,
could I quickly respond that we do have an internal policy instruction about this. There's no formal board policy on it. I think it really is a matter of staying on top of employees to follow through. And if we can get a formal board policy, but you'll have my commitment that we're going to continue to work, get people to simply follow through on the existing policy, the existing signage system, and simply provide
it. Well, if that were working, I wouldn't have imposed upon everyone with this comment today. It is not working. There have been recent examples where it hasn't been working. There are recent examples where I've asked for this to happen. I don't get any response. The signs don't go up. You know, I mean, I'm clearly at a point of frustration about this, and if there was an internal policy that was working, I would certainly be the first to say that we don't need board action. But my experience is that there is no internal policy that is working, and thus we need to send a message to those who are responsible for elevator, escalator repair that we want the riding public to be informed about these basic issues in some meaningful way. And you know what I'm talking about. You know the recent examples where still no sign. I am. The budget committee. Yes,
for you.
I actually have something before we leave.
Yes, Mr.
Operations along the same lines. And because what I think this is about communication, we're talking about it. Having had some pretty direct experience this morning on something we've talked about before and experienced before, I don't want to miss the opportunity. A whole bunch of us that come from the other side of the river were late, at least those who come from the south, which is three of the four people who represent Virginia on this board, and some staff people as well, along with many other people, were stuck because of a problem on the yellow line this morning. And while that kind of thing is going to happen, it's unfortunate that it happens on a day that we're already anticipating could be one of the biggest days in history. Nonetheless, there are some issues that continue to be troubling. One is that when we know we have a problem like that, enough so that the station manager is actually making announcements, we had people continuing to be fed down onto the platform on what is already, I think, one of the more dangerous platforms, potentially. It's given the ratio of the volume of passengers to, and it's a side platform station at Pentagon City where I was, and I don't know the situation in other stations, but at that station in particular where I was, that's always one that's got a fairly limited capacity down there, and we continued to have people coming in, and and it was quite some time before they stopped anybody from going from the mezzanine down, and I know in that time, at least at one point, somebody talked to a station manager who didn't seem to respond to the situation. And again, that's the kind of thing going to happen all the time, so we ought to be really good at managing it. And given our current situation, we especially need to be really, really good at managing it. Given the pattern of ridership lately, and now we're headed to the fall where traffic goes up in this region, you know, probably today is not going to be atypical. So I'm concerned about the practice there. And then the other part is the communications, which is just telling people. And I'd say Pentagon City is one of those stations in which you actually can sometimes understand what the person making the announcement is saying. It's not great, but it's a whole lot better than courthouse, where I can never understand anything that's being said. Still, there's a limited amount of information you're getting, and, you know, when the message is basically we're experiencing delays, which anybody standing there can figure out, that's one thing. But different information is going on the PIDs about when a train's coming from nothing to yellow in 9 minutes and a blue in 20 to suddenly changing to, you know, it becomes random or something. I don't understand the mechanics of the system. But it's not providing useful information at that point, and we have no other way to do it. And I will again raise, as I've talked about in the past, the fact that we, you know, have supposedly commercial opportunities that we've talked about and promoted in this committee as we've looked at, you know, advertising alternatives and all that. I was in Montreal this past summer, and I'd seen this before. They have large screens in stations that provide, you know, no sound, but, you know, running news clips, weather, stock, when the next train is coming. And if, you know, we already can provide something about when the next train is coming, but we don't have a way to provide more information. And if we use the existing system, which doesn't seem very flexible for that, then we compete with the basic information we're getting. We need more screens in stations, particularly those of high volumes, that can be used to say exactly what's going on, provide people with updated information. We had trains, because of this tie-up, they had to bring blue line trains to a stop that were coming into the station from the north, offload them, and send them back up. Now, I can understand some of the reasons they needed to do that, but it was hard to communicate people what they were doing and why. And I think it would be a lot easier for our customers if they had a little more information about exactly what's going on. You know, the audio is always going to be a very imperfect way of doing that. We need to find a way to get some more visual information out there. If we can do that by something that, you know, couples with some, you know, advertising value, if we don't have the money otherwise, then I don't know why, you know, we're not doing it and why we're not seeing any proposals, since these things exist. Systems I've seen from Atlanta to Montreal already out there, somebody must be interested in doing it. So I would hope that at a future meeting, in the not too distant future, we might talk about that. And I'd like to see something from the general manager to deal with the question of, you know, how we're dealing with communications and the operation within the station, and the responsible person, presumably the station manager, in managing control, managing the crowd, managing the flow of passengers, and in communicating with them in an effective way. Thank you.
Yes, Mr. Kaufman.
Thank you. I agree with my colleagues' concerns, but I did want to say that on the Yellow Line train this morning, the operator of the train did periodically announce that there was a problem with the train broken down up ahead, and would make that announcement periodically as folks would otherwise were running into the train. So I just mentioned that.
We're on the train.
I was on the train.
If I can quickly comment, I'm glad that we have evidence of the need for the rail cars that Mr. Linton mentioned before. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry that it came in this way. I'm also happy to hear that the station manager was making announcements, as was the rail car operators, and now we're moving on to what the next level of quality information for our customers are, and that would be things like screens. We also recognize, though, that the communication systems that deal with the screens relate to our ability to have multiple cellular providers in the system, or improvements to our public safety communications. And we want to be careful that we don't get into a long-term contractual arrangement that is only dealing with one particular piece of the pie and leaving some of the other pieces out there. That's why we've actually put together a technology symposium where we've asked people who actually have experience. We've talked to the people from Montreal. We've worked with a couple of local media companies to ask them what's the best way to communicate to 1.2 million people a day, thinking that they might know a thing or two about it that we don't, and are exploring technologies from, you know, what they're doing in London to what they're doing in Montreal to what they're doing in other properties, to ask the question, what can we do to do it well and do it right, so we don't feel three, 4 years down the road that we did something, but maybe it was a mistake. So I think that I think we have to be careful. We said before that you only get as good a response as the question you ask. And that's why we asked for some assistance to allow us to write this parking RFP as well as possibly. I think that's also why we're doing a lot of homework on technology, information, communications, so that we can make sure that we're asking the right questions and getting the right responses. So I agree with you, Mr. Zimmerman. I think that this is a very, very, very high priority. But I also don't want to rush it and get something that will be, you know, that will be suboptimal for the riders.
I'd like a progress report at some point, though.
We'd love to do more about
it. I'm eager to move on to the budget committee.
I did not share your experience, but I thought I heard something else in your comments. And I think we recall the technology piece, and we move forward in trying to come back with that. But that, as an implementation piece, is going to be a ways off. I think there is another part of communication that I heard and I experienced, and that is, short of us implementing the technology that's right. needed, what do we do to ensure the communication goes out to the general public at the appropriate place that prevents the concerns of the danger and overcrowdedness that may occur in the station when we have those problems? And we all experience that, you know, full of traffic and people have no idea what's going on. And it seems like some way we can have a process that will say, based on this emergency, where the traffic of people start, we start communicating the issue versus relying only upon the station managers who are really inside on the train.
Well, if the technology is the hardware, the strategy is the software. And we actually do have a comprehensive effort that was put together as a result of the floods to look at the software, to look at the issues of who makes the announcements, when they make the announcements. And I think the level of announcements, the increased level of announcements, might be in part the result of some of those discussions. My feeling was, coming out of the floods, I'd rather have complaints that we were giving people too many announcements than too few. I'd rather we were annoying people with announcements, frankly, and then we could ratchet back from that. I don't know if we've quite reached that level. The next issue was this crowd control issue, and that simply is working with station managers in stations such as the one you were discussing, Pentagon City, and making sure that they know that their responsibility is, in part, to manage the flow of the crowd coming into the station so that it never gets above a level that's unmanageable.
And I want to make clear, I do appreciate the fact that the station manager was making announcements. You know, when I first got there, it was a useful announcement to know that there was a delay and it was because of a train stuck. That was all good. My point was really that the information didn't get updated enough so that anybody that had any idea whether we were looking at a 10-minute wait or a 20-minute wait, whether some of us should be thinking about, you know, looking for a bus that was going where we were going or anything else. It just, you know, he didn't have any more information than he had had 20 minutes earlier.
Right.
And so there's some other level of communication internally there. That
right. Thanks.
Okay. I'll thank my colleagues. Is there any other business? Otherwise, I'd like to ask Mr. Graham if you'd like to convene the budget committee.
Do people feel the need for a break?
No.
Tell the truth.
No.
Those who aren't sharing will take breaks as they need them.
That's right. Exactly.
All right. Well, we'll proceed to the budget committee just as soon as we set up.